We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
If we don't get this right, the incredible crushing burden of the national mortgage, it'll hurt the poor and the young the worst, but it'll hurt us all. It is possible to go beyond the point of indebtedness where it just cannot grow and provide jobs and provide hope at the necessary rate for its people anymore, because too much money is being diverted to pay the interest.
You write in your book about continuing to pay for things like Medicare and Social Security. How would you fix these programs, and are they fixable?
Well, they are fixable. Social Security certainly is. Medicare is bigger and tougher, but I would start by concentrating the resources on the people who really need them. There's absolutely no reason to send a Social Security check to the wealthiest Americans or to pay for their health care. I would move beyond that to very gradually in the future, raising the age of eligibility to something closer, matches more closely the longevity of Americans today.
Now, Governor, let's just expound upon it, something you said a little bit while ago, how we were talking about how the nation's debt problem, that you feel it's the paramount issue, and it's something that politicians on both sides of the aisle should really concentrate on. But in this last legislative session in Indiana, it almost seems like you didn't sort of follow your own advice, because you signed into law the cutting of funding for Planned Parenthood, and now Indiana lawmakers are also seeking an amendment to the state's constitution to ban same-sex marriage. So it seems like your course of action isn't being followed.
Well, Michael, there's a fundamental flaw in your logic. The point I've made about a truce on other issues is aimed at the federal government, which has a fiscal and financial disaster on its hands. And I said, if you're in that situation, you ought to stop arguing about other things. Indiana has no disaster on its hands. We're a AAA credit. We got a better credit rating than federal government and all but a handful of states. We are rock solid, and therefore my advice had absolutely nothing to do with our home front, where our legislature was free to debate other questions. I didn't initiate either of those things you just mentioned, but it was not, as I saw it, out of bounds at all for our legislature, which did not have a train wreck on its hands, to deal with other questions.
Fair enough. Certainly not a central theme in your book, but there in Chapter 8, you describe the overwhelmingly Democratic area of Northwest Indiana as being Chicago-dominated, both in culture and politics. You go on to say that it has a reputation for government corruption, labor union aggression, and a place where employers are more likely to flee than invest in. Those words aren't sitting well with many of the politicals here in Northwest Indiana, including Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott, who kind of feels you threw the region under a bus with those comments when it's trying to attract new business, industry, and jobs. Do you stand by those comments?
Every word, of course. They're perfectly true, and everybody knows it. And they've been said by others for a long time. I have come to Northwest Indiana relentlessly 70-odd times over the last several years. A friend and foe up there would all agree no governor they've known has been there half as much. We created a RDA and delivered unprecedented amounts of money to try to help the region economically. And I have spent years going around the rest of Indiana saying, pay more attention to the northwest corner. They're a vital part of the state that can really be part of our growth as a state. But every time I came and every time I said that, Mike, I said, listen, folks, this is a two-way street. If you want the rest of Indiana to support you, if you want employers from elsewhere to come here, you know, you got to make some improvement. We got to have less surplus in government. I'm talking about too much government, too many layers, too many politicians, too high of taxes. And you got to have a more welcoming business climate. And a big start on that would be to end this stigma of all the long history of illegality in public office. Everybody, all the politicians there jump out and say all kind of terrible things about me, and the very same day, seven more public officials get indicted. Case closed.
Let me ask you this. Would you feel that way if you yourself had better political success in Northwest Indiana, if you got more votes or more votes for Republican candidates?
Hadn't got anything to do with it. You know, I came there 70 times despite, you know, losing by something like the usual margins. We set the all-time record for the biggest political win in Indiana history in 2008, despite not making much improvement in Northwest Indiana. I'm just trying to build a better state and a better state economy. But, you know, you don't do that by denial, and you don't do that by telling other than the truth.
Now, Governor, Chicago isn't quite let off the hook in your book. You're critical of Chicago area politicians, some in your own party, who voiced strong objection to the major expansion at the BP refinery in nearby Whiting, Indiana. They took exception to the possibility of heavier pollution discharges entering Lake Michigan. You write those environmental concerns were unjustified and hypocritical, since if the BP project was in Illinois, you theorize those concerns wouldn't be the same. Do you still stand by that?
Every word of that. Chicago puts more ammonia into Lake Michigan by far than that plant ever would. I raised it there because it was so symptomatic of a big national problem that we've got. We've got to start growing the private economy of this country if we want to put people back to work and if we want to preserve the American dream. And there's been just a very unfortunate tendency for people to disregard that and you know, try to curry favor with this or that group by blocking, stalling, or making more expensive project that would create jobs in our country. And, you know, I spent a lot of time studying that situation. A charge after charge after charge that was made turned out to be totally bogus. And I realized they were for political motives not out of any sincere concern for the environment.
Now, Governor, you were being strongly pushed by your supporters around the country to run for president. You declined, of course. Are you planning to support anyone in the current field of GOP presidential candidates?
I think there's some good people running. I really do. I surely support whoever our nominee is, because I think a change in national direction is desperately needed. But the person I would get most excited about is someone who had the confidence to trust the American people, to level with people about the severity of our problem, the big changes that are going to be necessary, why it's in everybody's interest. And we haven't seen that yet, but hey, it's early.
You know, Indiana also has a pretty heated GOP primary for U.S. Senator. Richard Lugar has held that seat for decades, but his challenger is Indiana State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, and he's backed by the Tea Party, and he's mentioned in your book. Are you planning to support either of the candidates in that race?
Yeah, I've already said I'll be voting for Senator Lugar. I think these are two good men and both credible, but the senator has been a really spectacular public servant. Any state would be proud to have him. He's still got all the good judgment that he's always had. And so I personally plan to vote for him and think he'll do fine.